Blog Talk Radio. Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child?
Good afternoon. You are listening to Voices for Justice on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michelle Bart, and today, February 23rd, 2011, CNN's Amber Lyon will take your calls. Once again, we are going to look beneath the surface at America's dirtiest little secret, human trafficking. In particular today, sex trafficking in our backyards here in the United States. First, I'd like to say thank you to Emil for the use of his song, Missing Child, once again. And phone lines are open. The call-in number is 347-838-8622. The chat room is also open. Log on to blogtalkradio.com/helpingheroes and click chat. If you or someone you know has been trafficked and needs help, the hotline number is 888-37-37888. Or at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, the number is 1-800-THE-LOST. Amber Lyon is an award-winning investigative documentary reporter out of CNN's headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. Since joining CNN, she was reporting on the first live report from beneath the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. She was the only reporter to broadcast live exclusively from beneath the oil spill and connect viewers with what was happening beneath the BP oil disaster. Amber also investigated the sex trafficking of minors on Craigslist. In a CNN exclusive, Amber brought her findings to Craig and Craigslist founder Craig Newmark. Her interview left Newmark speechless. Before joining CNN, Amber created Backpack Reporters, an organization where she and her team reports on stories that are not being covered by mainstream media. Amber is a three-time Emmy award-winning journalist. She holds a Bachelor of Arts degree in broadcast journalism from the University of Missouri. And it's safe to say Amber Lyon, without a doubt, is a voice for justice and a media diva making a difference. And we are honored she is going to be with us. Again, the call-in number is 347-838-8622. And the chat line is also open, and we welcome Amber with us today. Welcome, Amber.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Michelle. What an introduction. I appreciate it. I've never been called a media diva before. I like it. It's
well,
a new term I'll pick with me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. We try to focus a lot on journalists that come on this show, many of which have reported for CNN, that you are media divas because you go beneath the surface, and in particular, we're going to speak with you about your wonderful documentary, Selling the Girl Next Door. You go beneath the surface to have a voice for the voiceless and a voice for women and girls, and to us, having a voice for justice like that, you definitely need a good title on yourself. So if it's media diva or a voice for justice, whichever you prefer, we appreciate it and we welcome you.
Well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be able to do what I do and to be able to give a voice to the voiceless, as you said, because so often they are ignored by the breaking news of the day and just by time and budget constraints. And I've been given the privilege in life to be able to focus on those types of stories and do stories that really can have an impact.
Definitely. And as I mentioned, we're going to talk a lot about your documentary, Selling the Girl Next Door. You went undercover for an entire year to deliver this powerful documentary. And for those listening, please continue to check your local listings because we're thrilled that CNN continues to replay this documentary that CNN and producer Steve Turnham have done. Amber, you went undercover a whole year. How did you first get your producers and CNN to buy into this? And What did you expect to get out of it when you started doing your research?
Well, first of all, I have to give huge credit to my boss, Scott Matthews, who had a friend had tipped him off to this story, and he thought that, oh, well, Amber will be perfect at this because I do have a bit of a talent for going undercover. So he had contacted me with the story, and so I have to be honest with you. The first thing I said to him when he mentioned sex trafficking was, okay, Scott, well, that's fine. I'd love to do the story, but what kind of a translator do we need? Are these girls coming in from Russia, China? And then he told me, no, this is happening to American girls. And that's when the second something, a light bulb just clicked in my head. Wow, I can't believe how naive I was. I didn't know that this was happening to our girls here in America. And that's when it really just gave me the strength to continue to follow this for a year, because I figured if I'm very news savvy and if I've never really heard about this or had it thoroughly covered, then the majority of the public probably doesn't know this is going on either.
Definitely. What was it like to look beneath the surface at this particular criminal activity?
For me, more than anything, after hearing girls' stories repeatedly, similar stories of just calculated abuse, neglect, modern-day slavery, it was quite tough. I developed definitely a soft spot in my heart for these girls because they're so young, and to have something like this happen to them and be forced to sleep with grown men, it's just something that you can imagine they don't get over easily. It stays with them the rest of their life. And it just was really, really heart-wrenching for me.
You know, some organizations, some people say that many of the organizations and media and law enforcement, what they want us to believe about this issue is not really an epidemic as many of us are advocating for. Do you agree with that?
Are you saying that you think that some law enforcement don't think this is an epidemic?
No. There's many out there that say that human trafficking, especially here in America, is not as bad as many law enforcement agents and media and organizations like Seroptimus International or Polaris Project are working to end modern-day slavery. Some people out there say the problem isn't as bad as we make it out to be. After going undercover, do you agree with that?
Well, I'll have to tell you that regardless of whether people think this is going on or that the numbers are being inflated, every city in America that we visited and hit the streets looking for girls, in every city we were able to find underage girls being sex trafficked, and we were able to find them fairly easily just by picking up the phone, calling these ads on formerly Craigslist Adult Services section and on Backpage.com and other sites. And it was not hard to find these girls being sex trafficked. So that made me realize that there hasn't been thorough research. I don't know the numbers exactly. And, in fact, the problem is no one does. But we were able to find girls in every city very easily.
And, in fact, didn't you, when you posted your own ad on Backpage and Craigslist, didn't you, get many calls within minutes?
Oh, minutes, Michelle. We posted an ad on Craigslist. We had a couple dozen calls within 3 hours. I posted an ad on Backpage under the escort section. Within 4 minutes, my phone started ringing, caller after caller after caller soliciting sex.
So, regarding Craigslist and Backpage, I know that Seroptimus joined many, many organizations in San Francisco last summer at the footsteps of Craigslist. You've done an interview with Daryl Craig. Are they just not seeing the truth, or do you think that, in your opinion, basically, Craigslist and Backpage and the newspapers that you have targeted, are they just looking at the end result of getting an advertisement and paying and you know, the money that's coming into them, or do they not realize how bad the situation is that they're a part of?
I don't know whether they realize it or not. I'll put, let's take case in point, Backpage.com. They are projected to make about $20 million off adult ads alone in a year. Before our investigation, they sent us a list of things they're doing. They say they're working harder with law enforcement, working harder to screen the ads. They say that they think it's horrible that these girls are being sex trafficked on the site. They also have increased the reporting of suspicious ads to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I think in 2010 they reported around 30 ads, and just the beginning of 2011 they've reported 60 suspicious ads. They do tell us that they are doing everything that they can to combat this. That being said, we've still been able to go on a site like Backpage.com and see ads that could indicate it is an underage girl. Obviously, the pimps aren't going to advertise these girls as being, say, 13 years old, because that's going to send a red flag and the ad won't get posted. But they do use code words, sweet, young, innocent, and just phrases like new girl in town, to indicate to the buyers that these girls are underage. And we were able to find an ad that the title said Daddy's Little Girl shortly after Backpage has sent us a statement saying that they were doing everything they can to end these ads. We found an ad like that. It had gotten through the screeners. And above all, regardless of what these sites do to prevent girls from being sex trafficked on them, there is no 100% foolproof way to prevent kids from being sex trafficked on the site because of the age. They can lie about the age. They can also, their pimps can say on there that they're older than they are, put different photos, just disguise these ads. We had one 13-year-old out of Las Vegas who we focused the documentary on. Her name was Selena. And her pimp told her to tell all of her clients who came in that she was 18, 19 years old. Once again, lying about the age. So above all, Michelle, there's just no way, no matter how hard these sites work, for them to be 100% sure that children aren't being sex trafficked on the site.
CNN had requested an interview with Backpage and Village Voice Media executives many of times, I assume, to talk about the accusations. The company refused. Have you gotten anywhere with them since the documentary?
Yeah, they did send us a statement to say again that they were doing everything they can. They sent us about 20 or more points that you can find if you search for Backpage's company blog. They list all the points, all the efforts that they're taking. They've responded to us in that manner to tell us that they are doing everything that they say they can do. As far as an interview, I really wanted to sit down with the president, Jim Larkin, and just ask him, so what are you guys doing? Tell us in detail and ask him about specific cases of girls we found being sold on the site, because we found on our own three underage girls sold on Backpage.com. However, like you had mentioned, Michelle, they just don't want to verbally explain to us what's going on. But they did direct us to go to the company's blog if your listeners want to go and get more informed on what steps they're taking.
Do you think that those publications and websites are more like a legal brothel, and actually the owners of those venues are more, they're just as to blame as pimps are in this epidemic, or?
I can't have an opinion on that either way. I look at it from what we've found, and the sites are profiting off of ads, sex ads, and some of those ads contain children being sold for sex. So you put two and two together. When it comes down to it, whether they want to be or not, they are profiting off of child sex trafficking. That's pretty much what we found. So,
you mentioned Selena. I'm going to quote your opening statement about her from your documentary. Her ankles and wrists are shackled. She's wearing used sweats in bright colors, of the jailhouse, orange, blue, and yellow. She shuffles to the courtroom to face the judge, her mother, and an uncertain future. Selena is a 13-year-old who was sold for sex. As we watch this documentary, Amber, she continuously would run away from home. One of the questions someone emailed us, because they were unable to be on the show today due to working schedules, did you ever find out why she continued to run away from home?
We did not find that out. Usually the reason these girls run away from home, there's some underlying reason. However, in this situation, I had asked Selena, you know, is there a reason you keep leaving? And she said that she was so in love with her pimp and so in love with the addiction. He had gotten her hooked on several types of drugs, and getting those drugs, that's why she continued to run away. Why she ran away in the first place, she had mentioned, and her mother had mentioned, that they had gotten in a fight and she fled the house and was walking along the Vegas Strip, and that's when this guy pulled up to her and said, hey, you need a ride? And she looked around and realized, okay, I do need a ride. This guy's cute. I'm going to get in his car. I like him. And everything just went downhill from there. He ended up getting her hooked on drugs and was able to control her with that and then sell her online to grown men for sex. But above all, Michelle, there may be an underlying reason there. I don't want to speculate. But as far as we found out, it was mainly because she had gotten in a fight with her mom initially, and then after that, just to be with her pimp and to get the drugs.
I was taken by her mother. She seemed very sincere. It didn't appear to us. We had a viewing event on Super Bowl Sunday. Many of the survivors from Seroptimus Survivor Network came together and watched your documentary in place of the Super Bowl, and that's a whole nother ball game. Pardon the pun.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
But
unfortunately, I mean, we aired it against the Super Bowl, and that always made me nervous.
I think it was
really
great.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm glad
kudos to CNN. That's all I can say about that.
Thank you.
Kudos to CNN for running it against the Super Bowl. They may not have known what they were doing at the time, but they were sending a message. At least you had the support from many survivors, not only in the Portland area, but I'm sure around the country, who definitely were supporting the efforts of Traffic 911 and Jay Ratcliffe and other ball players that were standing up against human trafficking during the Super Bowl. So kudos to CNN again. But it didn't appear that Selena was a throwaway teen, as we would classify a child these days, such as a gay youth in the Portland area that is thrown out because of their sexual identity, and they may find themselves on Stark Street and doing trafficking or being pimped out is a way of life for them to survive. It didn't appear Selena was a throwaway teen, more so that she came from a family, a loving family. She wanted to go home to her sister, but I was very taken by Judge Voy's position in that I don't think I would have sent her back, because it was almost seemed like a coached up reason of why she wanted to go home. The tears were there, but it felt more like that was what her pimp might have told her how to react in order to try to get out.
And
what was your
fear.
Take on it?
My take was that the judge, and this is what they told me, the judge and her mother were just so worried that if she did come back home, she may be okay for a couple of days, but then they feared she would fall back into that same pattern of running away. The second her pimp knew she was out, he may try to take advantage of that and have her come back with him, because he was profiting off of her. I mean, she's a commodity. He needs her. So they really feared that. And while the chains and the shackles at the Clark County Juvenile Detention Center appear as a cruel punishment, it really, for them, was the safest option they had for Selena, because they feared so highly that if they let her go, she was going to end up back on the streets, which is the case.
Do you know
for
how
a lot
old
of
her pimp
girls.
Was or is?
She'd had several pimps. She had one, I think her first pimp was in his early 20s, and a couple of later down the road were in their late 20s. And this was, she started when she was 12, so they were quite a bit older than
her. So none of
them
had been arrested? She didn't provide law enforcement or the judge any information on having them arrested in order to plea out?
That's something that we don't know. We didn't get into that just for her own safety.
That's understandable. And her mom, just so that our listeners understand, and we see this a lot here in Portland with the families we're working with, we have individuals whose daughters have been trafficked, and they're former police officers or hotel executives. Selena's mother is a teacher.
A middle school
correct?
Teacher, yeah. Yeah, she teaches girls and boys that are Selena's same age.
It was very apparent that this was tearing her mother apart to have to leave her daughter there. But she was honest and true to the judge.
And honest and true to us, which we appreciated as well. And what she told us repeatedly is she's just worn out. She tried everything she could to get Selena help. And there was no places or recovery centers where she could put Selena. So it came to the point that when Selena was at home running away so often, that she would want Selena to get arrested so that Selena would end up in the juvenile detention facility. Because at least there, her future was certain that she was in her cell and she was safe, versus when she runs away and her mom doesn't know the next time the phone rings whether it's going to be a police officer saying they found her daughter dead or yeah. Something equally horrific.
I want to also let the listeners know that some statistical information from the Department of Justice and our friends at Polaris Project, approximately 600,000 to 800,000 victims annually are trafficked across international borders. And according to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, at least 100,000 underage girls are being sex trafficked right here in America today. Those numbers are startling. For a reporter, and you, if you can't answer this, I understand somebody, one of our survivors wanted to know your take on this. As a reporter, when other journalists that have front page headlines that read something like sex trafficking in places like Vegas or Portland, the stats don't back up law enforcement and politicians, what they're telling the public. How can each journalist or each reporter feel differently about an issue like this? We recently saw a journalist that made a claim that what law enforcement and politicians were telling the public was a myth, and I quote, a myth. The survivors were appalled at that article, and so were a few journalists that were in town for our human trafficking conference. How do you feel about that?
I can't comment, Michelle, directly on that article, but what I can comment about is my method of reporting, and the first thing we did when we heard that this was happening to American youth was say, let's hit the streets and see if we find that this is a problem and we find that this is happening to girls, especially in this case when there's no data, there aren't conclusive studies to give numbers. So the best thing we can do is hit the streets to see what's going on. And as I was saying earlier, we found in every city we visited, we found it was very easy to find underage sex trafficking victims via the internet. And that's what made us realize that this just the ease of it, that this was a problem. Now, I'd say maybe some journalists may be more numbers-based, and so they think maybe the numbers aren't there, maybe the problem isn't there. But in this case, we saw there aren't any conclusive studies on this, so we're going to go hit the streets and find the problem, see if there is a problem on our own.
And even if one underage child is trafficked or one person is trafficked in the United States or anywhere around the world, it's one too many, to quote Senator Ron Wyden. It's one too many. I want to ask you some questions in regards to your undercover investigation that led you off the beaten path to a hotel where you were meeting someone who was going to wire you $30,000 and wanted you to take a lot of different credit cards so it wouldn't call attention or raise a red flag. Did they ever arrest that individual or that hotel? It's hard to believe that a hotel does not know what's going on out in the boondocks.
I can't comment on that directly. That has to remain confidential. But as you said, we had posted an ad on Backpage.com, and I had indicated to that caller who responded to my ad that I was underage and in Georgia at the time, and he still agreed to traffic me across state lines and offer me money to perform sexual relations with his wealthy client. And that was quite surprising to us. We'd been used to getting, for most of these ads, we'd just been getting calls from guys who lived in the area and wanted to find out what roadside hotel we were at so they could meet us. It was the first time we'd had someone try to send us across state lines. So it was quite a journey. We weren't quite expecting to get pictures of a $30,000 check waiting for us and to have this happen. But in the end, it really, for us, showed that the vulnerability these girls have when their ads are up on sites like Backpage.com. Because fortunately, I had the option to not go into that hotel room with that man and to turn around and go back home and sleep in the comfort of my own bed. But so many of these girls who I've talked to don't have that option, and they have to constantly, sometimes four or five times a night, get in the car with strange men or have strange men knocking at the door at the hotel room. They never know who's going to walk in next, and they can't turn around and stop it because otherwise they could get beat by their pimp, and they're being forced to do that. And that's when it really hit me, Michelle, the gravity of what these girls go through and just how absolutely horrific and saddening it is that they are forced to be sex slaves.
Mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is. It's when I had these guys calling me on the phone, that was it. Like, I ended it after that phone call. We didn't go in and physically meet with the guys, but I just, as I was continually posing as this underage girl, you, as an actress, you get in that character. And sometimes these guys would say very creepy things. Some of them would just sound very scary. It would almost give you the chills on your arms, the way they would talk to you and want to isolate you from your pimp and just have you alone. You almost wondered if they were the type of guy who might try to abuse you in some way. And when I would hear these guys talk to me like that, I really could feel what these girls would feel every time they answer the phone. And I just felt so fortunate that I was able to hang up the phone and go back to my regular life, whereas these girls just don't have that option.
In fact, Selena had mentioned to you that she would do four or five tricks a day at a rate of $300 an hour or $150 for a half. And we have worked with survivors, and we have heard stories out on this end of the spectrum where they've done as many as 28 tricks a night. That, to me, you're right. Going back to your own cozy life and your home, it's just mind-boggling. How did you sleep during your investigation for a year?
I didn't. I feel like they say the president ages 2 years for every one. I think I aged 7 for every 1 year. Sometimes it did keep me up at night thinking about the girls because I just couldn't imagine being that young and being that manipulated, isolated from your family, hooked on drugs so that you're forced to go back to a pimp who also pretends to love you and then beats you at the same time. And then also feeling pretty much abandoned by society. I noticed that in a lot of the girls that I talk to. They just feel abandoned because there's no place for them to go. A lot of them are embarrassed to go back home after what's happened to them. They feel like their families won't want them anymore. They feel dirty. They feel like they've done something wrong. We found one girl in a 14-year-old out of St. Louis who was being sold for sex by a female pimp on Backpage.com. And her mother said that when she got her daughter home, when her daughter was finally rescued after 9 months of being trafficked, the first thing she said to her daughter was, well, why didn't you just pick up the phone? Why didn't you call me and come home? I would have saved you. And the daughter said, well, Mom, I thought you wouldn't want me anymore because of all the things, the bad things I had done. And that's really how a lot of these girls feel, unfortunately. They just feel like they are at fault. And when we cuff them and put them in detention centers, because that's the only place we have to put them, we reinforce that feeling. When we, as a nation, give all of the money available to sex trafficking victims to foreign girls, not our domestic girls, that reinforces that feeling. And when we turn our backs on these girls, it just doesn't make life any easier for them.
And some women also. I know that we're talking about underage girls with Amber Lyon today in regards to her documentary Selling the Girl Next Door on CNN. But we do know that many of the women that are being trafficked and sold and prostituted are also victims of human trafficking as underage girls, and they just can't get out. We are speaking with Amber Lyon. If you have any questions for her, please feel free and call 347-838-8622. You did mention in the show, which I want to let listeners know, this doesn't just focus on Nevada and Clark County out there in the Vegas world, but Amber's investigation led her also through Maryland, Missouri, Tennessee as well. Correct, Amber?
Yeah, correct. Mm-hmm. And in every one of those cities, we found underage girls being sex trafficked. And it was the same story with all of them, just a different city.
What about Dennis Huff? I don't want to mm-hmm. spend too much time on him, but he is the legal brothel owner that everyone seems to know out in Vegas. Were you surprised at what you learned about his operation? And when you asked how many of the girls had been prostituted underage and only a few raised their hand, do you feel that there were more people that were but were afraid to say?
I think it's very tough, and I give those girls who spoke with us on camera and poured their hearts out a lot of credit. It's very tough to come forward and talk about sexual abuse that happened to you. It's a very embarrassing topic. So there may have been more, I don't know, but we definitely found 6 of the girls who were there at the time. Girls cycle in and out of that brothel, but at that particular time there were 6 girls who had been trafficked underage. And of those 6, there were several of them who'd been, everything went downhill from when they were maybe 5 years old and had been molested by a family member, then felt that the only way they could be of any worth was sexually and ended up getting lured into sex trafficking at age 13, 14, 15. And then when they were able to get out of that, once again felt that the only use society would have for them would be physically and continued to stay in the route of prostitution. There may have been more, Michelle. I don't know. I can't really speculate on that, but you could imagine just logically that it is a really tough thing to talk about. So I could imagine there might have been girls who just didn't want to expose that on national TV.
Were you the first reporter that they allowed into, what's it called, the Bunny Ranch?
The Bunny Ranch, yes. They've had reporters in there in the past, but Dennis has never opened it up before to allow the girls to talk about being sex trafficked. And regardless about, I know there's strong feelings on both sides about Dennis Hoff and what he does for a living, which is selling women for sex, this is a man who did allow us to come in and opened his brothel to us and allowed us to talk to his girls, knowing that he would later be criticized quite severely for having girls work for him who'd been sex trafficked. But Dennis came to us after he had seen a piece we had done on Craigslist and said, I know this is happening. I know it's happened to some of my girls, and I want to let them tell their stories about how life is for a lot of these prostitutes who are out on the streets. So we give him credit
for
that.
So they're safe in his hands?
I think that's how he feels, yes. He tests them for STDs once a week. He gives them, they keep half their profits, and they do have security methods, panic buttons in the room. So for him, that is keeping the girls safe.
And they're free to go home at any time? Do they live there? Do they have their own lives, per se, or?
Yes, we met a mother who was working there who has, she has her MBA. She used to work for a well-known bank and just didn't like the routine of that lifestyle. So she started working for Dennis, and she comes and works for him. I think it was about 2 weeks every couple months, and then goes back and spends time with her child. Most of the girls that come in and out of Dennis's brothel, from what we saw and talking to them, just come every couple weeks, make some money, and then leave, and then come back and leave and go back and forth between working in the brothel and then their regular lives. The girls told us they could leave whenever they wanted to. There weren't any signs that they were being held there against their will, and as well as Dennis said that they could get up and walk out whenever they needed to.
And to make it known to our listeners, that place in Vegas is legal. He does pay taxes, and he does have a business license and all of that. So you can't really complain about him. If you don't like the way things are, that's when you take it up with your city hall. Let's go to somebody I felt was a hero in your documentary. That would be the juvenile court judge, William Voy. Mm-hmm. Seroptimus International, and in particular, all of the clubs in all 125 of the countries we represent, we have gotten on the bandwagon to support the efforts of many nonprofits working towards long-term shelters. And I find him as the hero among us, that he has crossed his T's and dotted his I's, but yet his hands are still tied from making a long-term shelter possible. How did you take that when you saw all those blueprints? That was just heart-wrenching for me to watch.
Because we had seen the girl that's so I'd just gone out with him to see the blueprints right after I toured the juvenile detention facility and seen the cells where the girls are staying now. So you see that. It's such a contrast. You see the cells, they're locked up like they're in prison, and then it's like the shining light, this facility that looks like a regular home. They have bedrooms. They have a staff that really gives them the care that they need tailored to sex trafficking victims. And he has this plan for years. I think it's 4 years he's been trying to get this built, asking the county for the $750,000 he would need to build it, constantly getting rejected, saying that they just don't have the money with the rough economy and the budget to pay for that. And I could tell that it really bothered Judge Boy. This is a man who's very passionate about helping the girls. He sees them weekly and come in and out of his courtroom, and he also carries a bit of guilt. And because one of the girls who was released, as we showed in the doc, 3 days later ended up with her throat slit, murdered. And so he feels guilt about that as a judge, and would really love to see this facility get built. But unfortunately, there's just not much more he can do besides try to raise more awareness about the issue. So maybe one day he'll get his wish, and I hope the best for him, that he has his dreams fulfilled, and the facility is construction starts in the facility.
We do have some long-term shelters. I believe there's two that are licensed out on the East Coast. Here on the West Coast, at one point about a year ago, there were 59 beds available identified for human traffic survivors from California to Seattle. I believe there's a place that's opened in the Seattle area recently. Portland, it doesn't matter where we rank on a national basis, but we're in the top two from what I understand from the FBI. And we have had so many organizations and individuals, private donors, and survivors and law enforcement agents working on this for 4 years as well. We've seen buildings come and buildings go. We've seen everybody's efforts get to a point, and yet you never reach that finish line. Do you think that that's a failure to those on the street that need a place to go when they are picked up?
I think that it could be definitely a letdown for these girls. More than anything, a letdown in them really realizing that they are victims, because there aren't those facilities to put them in, and instead they're locked up in chains. And what I hear over and over from therapists who deal with these girls is that that's the biggest problem. They never feel like they're victims, and they need to start feeling like they're victims in order to really get help and separate them from their pimps and realize that it's not their fault that they were taken advantage of and abused. But when we don't have a place like that to put them, and when they are locked up with other underage criminals, then once again we're reinforcing that feeling of them not being victims. And and I was talking to 13-year-old Selena, and she hated being in that juvenile detention facility. And it was a big letdown to her to have to be locked up in chains that in a cell that doesn't have a TV and away from her friends at age 13.
Yeah, 13. I mean, and she's been doing this how many years? The last year and a half?
About a year and a half. She started when she was 12.
And we know that the average onset of human trafficking is 13. And for our listeners, again, if you or someone you know has been trafficked, the hotline number at Polaris Project and the National Human Trafficking Resource Center is 1-888-373-7888. But we also know when trafficking hits, a lot of things happen prior to that. They're either lured in, befriended by that good-looking teenager who's really known as a recruiter in this war on women. What did you take away after doing this entire investigation for a year? how do you feel as a woman and as a reporter after this experience you've had?
I think what I took away from this the most is a real, genuine care for these girls. Oftentimes, society will just dismiss them as runaways and problem children. And when you really get to know a lot of them, you realize that there's always some underlying reason why they may have started running away or why they may be not your typical clean-cut teen. And when you dig below the surface, these girls are any girl in America. And when you develop a soft spot for them, you really hope the best for them and hope that eventually they will have funding and that they will have a place to put these girls when they are rescued by police, a place where they can get therapy tailored to sex trafficking victims and be treated, as I said, like a victim versus locked up in detention centers. Another thing that really surprised me about this too, Michelle, was the evolution of pimp and how the internet has made it so easy now that people are getting into the pimping business who wouldn't typically have seen being pimped. We were in St. Louis, and we found a 27-year-old mother of a 3-year-old who, while she was raising her 3-year-old during the day, was also selling a 14-year-old girl for sex online because she could do it out of her living room, and the 14-year-old would be at a hotel down the street, and she could arrange all the meetings via the internet. And that anonymity and that ability for pimps to be able to so easily sell these girls is incredible. You think about the olden days when you think of a pimp, they had to stand on the cold street corner and in the view of police and sell the girls. But now it's just become so easy that it just is really mind-boggling.
The pimps also, what we've learned out in this area, you said Selena had 2 or 3 pimps. You don't tend to hear that from too many people out here anyway, that's the norm. Usually, you know, you're with that one individual and you're his or hers. Did you find that a lot of the survivors that you spoke with had more than one pimp?
Yeah, we did. Selena had several. We found a girl in Maryland. Unfortunately, she was just 12 years old and had already gone through 2 pimps. Her first pimp was a woman and who sold her via the internet. And then her second pimp, who she ended up getting rescued from, was a 42-year-old man. So she had gone from one pimp, the woman, ran away and then come back home, then fled the home again and was picked up by this 42-year-old man. So it wasn't uncommon for us to see girls who had multiple pimps.
Really? Wow. What about your staff? You know, Steve and I believe Courtney
Steve's
and Kathy
amazing.
And Scott mm-hmm. Matthews, what happened when you all went for coffee after your film was done? How did they react and act towards everything that they saw and heard?
Well, everyone loved the documentary. It's been passed all around CNN. People are really excited about it. They liked the way it was produced and how raw and real it was. We got a lot of compliments on that. My boss, Scott Matthews, amazing boss, made all this possible to be able to do an hour-long documentary on this. It's a lot of money. CNN has invested a lot of money into a show like this. And he put forth the money and was very supportive of all of our efforts and our I remember I called him during the Christmas time at one time, and he was with his wife searching for a Christmas tree, and I'm on the other line telling him, is it okay for me to be sex trafficked to North Carolina as a 17-year-old? And he would, you know, give us permission to kind of go there and take risks, which was awesome. It's amazing to work for a boss like that. Kathy Slobogan, amazing woman as well, very supportive of the doc and was a great help editorially, as Courtney Yeager was. And more than anything, my producer, Steve Turnham, we're like Bonnie and Clyde. We're always together working on these types of crazy, adventurous documentaries. And Steve is just one of those guys who has a 13-year-old daughter himself. And really, when he sees how his daughter lives versus these other unfortunate girls who've been sex trafficked, I can just tell it just tears at his heartstrings. And he definitely wants to tell their story and goes above and beyond to do so. Spends a lot of time away from his own family and his kids to be out there helping these girls, which is quite a sacrifice. And he went above and beyond working to make this documentary possible. And he's been a great teammate because I can tell that he genuinely cares about the girls and genuinely wants to produce a good product that really displays the reality of what's going on. So it's priceless to have teammates like the ones I have at CNN. It's an honor to work for the network.
And for CNN to replay this documentary so many times, I know what that means. Can you tell our listeners what that means?
That it's a very good thing. it means that a lot of people watch. And that that CNN really felt passionate and proud of the product. And to air it one night is an honor. To get to take over an hour of air time on a network is valued and respected as CNN is a huge honor and is rare. And for them to give us three airings of the show in one night times 3 days, so it aired a total of 9 times within a matter of less than a month is phenomenal. And it was one of CNN's highest rated documentaries during the year, which was also great. It showed the public's appetite to learn more about child sex trafficking, and that made me really happy. The more people I saw watching it, the more people I knew would be more educated on what's going on, and that just made myself and my producer, Steve, elated.
I believe we have a question from one of our listeners from the 541 area. Caller, you're on the air. Do you have a question for Amber?
Yeah. Hi, Michelle. Hi, Amber. This is Dawn Schiller, and I'm a survivor, and I watched your piece. And I just want to say I really thought it was a fair and balanced piece. I think that I think you can do several pieces as offshoots of that one piece because you had to cover so many different aspects of the trafficking issue. But
mm-hmm.
I had a main question. Yeah, I had a main question. And really, as a survivor myself, I think that I was really curious how you stayed safe from the pimp when you went undercover so closely to meet up with them in these hotels. My experience is that pimps are usually armed. Mine was. And so very dangerous people. I was
Dawn,
scared.
Dawn, why don't you tell Amber who? Dawn, why don't you let Amber know who you are also, so that she can learn a little bit more about your story.
Wow. Okay. Well, I didn't mean for that. I just meant to ask a question. But
we are talking about throwaway children and things of that nature, and I think that's so important, and especially who your more or less pimp was. So.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Well, my pimp was John Holmes, and he was an infamous porn star who could have gotten anybody he wanted, but instead he chose to go after me at the age of 15, who was living in his same apartment complex outside of the porn world, and ended up trafficking me in three different ways, and one of them was to sell me to people like Eddie Nash, who was a big drug lord responsible for the Wonderland murders down in Los Angeles, allegedly responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I've written a book called The Road Through Wonderland and it's Surviving John Holmes, and that came out in August, where I talk about what exactly the things that you were saying, how you saw these kids, these girls, they are so full of fear and they think nobody's going to want them. And I know exactly what the pimp is saying to them. I know what he's, they're telling them, you're not worthy, nobody's going to want you anymore, you're dirty, you're worthless. And so they actually isolate them from ever reaching out from help or to being anything other than what they've tried to create them to be. So that's a really hard road to get them to change over and get some other kind of self-esteem. But I work with throwaway teens today, and I have a nonprofit too that helps them out. And we believe in mentoring and reaching out to kids that are in abusive and neglected circumstances that might be vulnerable to pimps. But back to my question, how did you stay safe? I was very afraid for you.
We are in a lot of unsafe situations. Unfortunately, it's my job. I mean, just yesterday I was undercover on a drug deal, and and we're just constantly, in order to tell the story, we feel like we need to be there, seeing what's really happening. And for us, in this case, that was really talking to these pimps. Okay, are these pimps really selling these girls? Who are they? In certain cases, we do bring along. We have a great security force at CNN. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we'll bring them out with us, as we did when we headed out to this random town in North Carolina. But other times we just made sure to meet them in very public places. I'd meet some of the pimps I met in Washington, D.C. We met at a well-known chain restaurant that we knew would be crowded. And my producer and photographer were waiting at the bar just in case something had happened. They could interact right then. Mm-hmm. More than anything, it was just being smart about it. We've had a lot of security training at CNN. We go through week-long courses to train on how to behave in these situations. And so luckily we didn't run into any problems. But like you said, some of these pimps are armed and they are very dangerous people. And I've talked with people who are murderers, rapists, and I felt a very similar feeling talking with these pimps, because they are such calculated manipulators and abusers.
Oh, yeah. And women are possessions, or these girls are their possessions. And if, literally, if you're out of line, you're threatened with death. And if, it's up against their money is what it's up against as well, and their drugs. And so that's a very, very scary situation. And I commend you for getting in that far. And I don't think that somebody waiting for you in the bar down the street was close enough to security. In my opinion, your team,
They were in. They were at the bar inside the same restaurant. No, they weren't down the street.
Oh, they were.
I posted in the booth, and then they come in and meet me and sit down. And then my photographer and producer were at the bar, keeping an eye on me, kind of undercover in case something had happened. And and they've all survived Iraq, Afghanistan, Rwanda, war zone.
Oh,
so I definitely trusted their instinct as to how safe the situation was. But I have to say, if they were down at the bar, it'd have to be a really good situation for me to go in there alone.
right. And so I know, and so I'm thinking too, how did these pimps trust you in a public place? Because they would have normally been very skeptical, because they are very savvy. They're very, very savvy. They're very street smart and very savvy. The other thing is,
you know what got me though, Amber, was the fact that, and I'm sure this was the agreement that had to be made to put him on, but the Johns, whose faces were covered, I know that was one thing that the survivors that viewed your film
said. I knew
that was coming. Why should they be covered?
I knew this question was coming, and that's the first thing I thought when you were putting out those masks, and I feel like I should have added another line explaining why we covered their faces. We did that in order to get access to them, in order to have them be honest with us. We felt that we weren't allowed to show their faces and get that access. So we didn't really have a choice. We weren't allowed to show their faces, or we wouldn't have been able to go in there and enter. We were invited into that private John school under the conditions that we wouldn't reveal their identities. B, we decided to use the ski masks in order to really let them feel anonymous, rather than us saying we're going to fuzz your face later. We felt it made them feel more anonymous. And then in that way, we felt above all the value of hearing what they had to say, how they used the internet to find these girls, exceeded the value of just revealing one or two random guys' identities. Because we were told some stuff. We had one guy in the front row who admitted on camera that he had hired girls who were underage. And this was a guy who didn't plead guilty to hiring girls who are underage. So had someone put two and two together, they could have used that tape as evidence against him to charge him with soliciting sex with a minor, which would label him a sex offender the rest of his life. So he took a big risk. And we felt like they wouldn't have taken those risks and been as honest with us if they didn't know their identities were concealed. And But we weren't able to show their identities and under the conditions of entering that school. So we were just able to get their information, which proved to be pretty interesting. I mean, the guy saying he can order a girl off his cell phone quicker than a pizza, all of the guys saying that they don't know the age of the girls. They don't ID them. When the girl walks in, she could be underage. They have no concrete way to prove how old the girl is. It's quite interesting information.
So go ahead, Dawn.
Oh, I'm sorry. This was my last part of the question before I forget. But I wasn't aware. It wasn't very clear to me whether or not the pimps that were trying to traffic you, whether they were prosecuted or not, or was there some kind of excuse that they got away with it, or was it you didn't have police with you, or I don't know, or were their identities kept secret. I don't really know for a fact if they were ever held accountable for attempting to traffic you.
We have to keep that information confidential as of now.
Okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a curious. It was a glaring curiosity.
Thanks, Dawn.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amber, nice talking with you.
You too.
Speaking about ordering pizzas within 30 minutes, we've gone over your time, and I know that you're on a breaking news story. Any last thoughts or any comments that you wish to share with our listeners and those that will be listening this evening when they download the podcast?
I had heard you earlier give the number to the Polaris Project, and just a way to empower listeners to keep their eyes out for any girls that they suspect might be being trafficked. I think one of the most eye-opening things that I discovered throughout this documentary is whether a girl's underage or not, the majority of the girls standing on street corners waiting to get in John's cars are victims. And they are being forced to do that by a pimp. And if you suspect that this is going on, please make a call. It's pretty obvious if someone's standing on the corner all day long, or you continually see them on your neighborhood corner, instead of what some people tend to do and say, oh, look at that hooker, instead maybe reevaluate the situation and think that girl may be a victim and may be being forced to stand out there, and maybe if you feel it in your heart to pick up the phone and call in and report the situation.
That child could be ours. You know, that's the thing that you have to, I believe, your recent CNN hero said that in her acceptance speech, and that is, you can't say it happens to someone else's child. You have to say, what would you want someone to do if it was your child? And you would definitely want somebody to call it in, because we know that many of the children kidnapped and abducted these days, one possibility is human trafficking. And, you know, until they come home, it could be 18 years, like J.C. Dugard. We don't know.
But unless you see something and you call it in, we'll never know. So we have to be the eyes and ears, and I agree. One last question for you, Amber. How has this changed your life?
It has really given me the strength to continue not having a life and following stories like these, because you really can see that they do make a difference, and your work and time are slowly changing the world, and it's just a very empowering feeling, and it really gives you drive and motivation to continue to be a crazy journalist who is sitting at the airport as I am right now on the cell phone with all my bags in front of me, heading to a new place where I'm, in fact, right now I don't even know where I'm heading. I got to call my boss to find out. But it gives me the strength to live a crazy life like this and really give a lot of your time and your energy to these stories, because you do know that people are listening and you really can help expose problems. So it's been such an inspiration for me, Michelle.
Well, it's an inspiration for all of us, and especially I speak for Seroptimus and my company, Helping Heroes, when I say kudos to CNN. We've worked very hard on making sure that whatever you're doing, that our members know about it, because I'll tell you, our relationship with Jane Velez Mitchell and Nancy Grace and the people that are coming home because of their hard work and reporting and stories like what you've done with Selling the Girl Next Door, for CNN to take a stand to allow a documentary like this to be aired not once but many times, kudos, because this is opening the communication. And you're taking, just like you did with the BP oil spill, you're taking the viewers into a world that really perception from a speaker just would never, ever open their eyes even more without seeing it. And you've been able to do that. So kudos to you. Kudos to CNN. And keep up the great job. And I hope that they buy into your next documentary idea. And we're here to support that effort and make sure people watch it. So thank you, Amber. I know that you're going off on assignment, and be safe. And we appreciate you being on the show. And thank you for being a voice for justice. I speak on behalf of so many people that say thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. It was an honor to be on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And to our listeners, we want to thank all of you also and all those in the chat room. We have gone over the time, but as our show always does, there's always a good purpose behind that. We'd like to say thank you to Amber and those taking the time to listen and talk about this problem. Communication, folks, is the key. Our next show is actually tomorrow. We have back-to-back shows this week. Tomorrow at 6 p.m. Pacific time with musician Buzzy Martin, who will be speaking with us about his new book and picture, Don't Shoot, I'm the Guitar Man. Then on Saturday, we sit down with authors Ann Garrett and Nancy Goodell, who will talk with us about handling our frazzled children. If you are a parent, teacher, or someone who loves children, join the conversation so we can prevent frazzled kids from being a part of statistics that we were speaking to today with Amber about. All of us can be a voice for justice, and we need to know what you will be doing this week to make a difference, because you do have a voice, and if you sing loud enough, the whole world will hear you. Next month, we will be singing loudly with Seattle attorney Ann Bremner when we sit down with Ann and some family members of Amanda Knox. That is a case that we believe in too, whether it's Sarah Cruzan, the young lady that shot her pimp and is serving a lifetime without the possibility of parole, or having a voice for justice for all human traffic survivors that need a voice. So be that voice for justice. What will you do this week to make a difference? Join us tomorrow and tell us what you're going to do. Until we meet again, have a great day and use your voice for the voiceless. We're going to leave with Emil, Missing Child again. And thank you to Nancy Grace for the introduction to this young man. Thank you so much.
Can anybody out there hear my voice? Does anybody out there really care for a missing child? I'm a stranger in a strange place, and I don't know how I got here. I'm so far away from home. I would run, but I'm afraid to, 'cause I don't know what would happen. Could I make it all alone? If I could get someone's attention, one kind soul to look my way, maybe you would recognize me from the pictures where they say I'm a missing child. Could be your son, could be your friend, could be your daughter. No way to know, I'll be bound to love forever. Won't somebody please, come look for me. Like I vanished in thin air. All the places they can hide me, miracles to find me. Do I really have a prayer? I am sending out this message. Won't you pass these words along? Voice. anybody out there really care?